But let's kick off this morning, if we may, by welcoming back into the program a man who last joined us when he authored his latest book about the tyranny of ideas and how liberals skew the argument in the arena of ideas. His name is Jonah Goldberg. He is a best-selling author. He is also the founding editor at National Review Online. And he'll be in Traverse City on Friday, as it just so happens, along with us. But we begin this morning by talking about life for Jonah at home in Washington, D.C., where the power's been out for 2 days. Jonah, how are you holding up?
Good morning, sir. It's not quite Thunderdome yet here, but it's getting there.
Newt Gingrich said this is an example of what would happen if we were hit by an electromagnetic pulse, which I thought was an interesting little comparison.
Yeah, I mean, Newt has been big on this electromagnetic pulse thing for a very long time, and he's right. You know, if you got hit by an electromagnetic pulse, you'd have no electricity. It'd be worse if you got hit by an EMP, though, because your iPhones wouldn't work and your iPads. There'd be nothing with an electrical circuit that works. But this is more like the way Washington works, which is really, really poorly.
Yeah, well, we wouldn't be talking on the phone right now with an EMP. So
that's right.
It's really that simple. Give us an idea of what life is like, how you get by for this long a period of time. All of us have lost electricity in storms, I think. And,
right.
You know, we worry about the foods in the refrigerator spoiling after maybe a day. But we load up with water and do our best to barbecue some foods. What are you doing? What's day-to-day life right now?
Well, we're fortunate. My sister-in-law, who lives near a hospital, is on the part of the grid that works. So we've been decamped there for a big chunk of it. We just go back to feed the cats residing at my home. One of the biggest problems in D.C. these days is about half of the traffic lights in the area don't work. And the rule is that they become four-way stops. And the problem is that no one respects that rule. So it's just utter anarchy at almost every intersection, and it makes commuting the joy you can imagine it would be.
I would think the roads would be fairly empty, though. Why are they so busy?
Well, they're fairly busy, except they're fairly empty, except save at like rush hour, where everybody who is driving, and at the various suburban intersections where people are trying to find gas and supermarkets and all of that kind of thing. It's not necessarily bumper to bumper, but it is just begging for an accident.
Yeah, well, for some, it's too bad that this didn't hit last Thursday before John Roberts and the Supreme Court issued their ruling.
Yeah, that would have been fun. It would have been fun if actually, as he was reading the ruling, the biblical storm blows in.
Yeah, so is he the new David Souter now?
You know, I think in fairness to him, and I'm one of the guys who has been quite mad at him from the beginning. You know, ever since he issued the ruling, I think a lot of this spin about how brilliant it was is just trying to turn lemons into lemonade. But in fairness to him, it's a little too soon to say he's a suitor. I mean, Souter was, you know, revealed himself to be a consistent liberal on the court. What Roberts did here may or may not have anything to do with ideology. It may have a lot to do with him trying to outthink everybody and play this game about defending the institution and putting a poison pill into the Commerce Clause. It's just too soon to see whether he's being clever or if he's changed his ideology. I don't think he's changed his ideology. He's been on the court for, 5 years now, and he's been a pretty consistent conservative voter. I just think he tried to get too clever here.
Yeah. Now, do you think he changed his mind on this?
I do.
Do you?
I do. I think that he basically reasoned his argument backwards from the conclusion he wanted to find. I think he did let the left, he did let the media work the refs, you know, as it were, and they shook him. And I think Jan Crawford Greenberg of CBS makes it pretty clear that he was going to vote at least to overturn the mandate.
Yeah.
And then he just had a change of heart.
How will the Supreme Court ruling impact the upcoming elections? Will it re-energize the Tea Party? We'll cover that next with Jonah Goldberg, our guest here on the Frank Beckman Show. Right now it's 9:15 at News Talk 760 WJR. best-selling author, syndicated columnist, and founder of National Review Online, Jonah Goldberg, joining us here on the Frank Beckman Show. So, healthcare, now that the Obamacare decision has been made by the Supreme Court, do you foresee this as sort of giving us a repeat of 2010 when the Tea Party activists who were upset about the passage of the law originally had such a big impact on the elections?
You know, I did more a couple days ago than I did after yesterday, where Eric Fernstrom, Romney's communications director or strategic advisor, I can never forget his title, kind of threw a monkey wrench in everything. You know, if you watch the Sunday shows, there was a wonderful unanimity from the Republicans about how the Supreme Court has declared this a tax, Obama's raising another huge tax, this Obamacare never would have passed if they were honest about the fact of being a tax. And then Eric Fernstrom goes on MSNBC and speaking for the Romney campaign, and it seemed to be a very calculated statement, says, no, we disagree with that. We think it's just a penalty. We don't think it's a tax. We disagree with the court. And basically what it looks like is that the Romney campaign is surrendering or calling for a truce on the health care argument entirely. They just don't want to talk about it. I don't think the Obama people really want to talk about it. And so I think it may have a galvanizing, energizing effect for the rank and file and for the Tea Parties and for those people. But I don't think we're going to see the Romney campaign leading that message, which I think is weird.
Well, they may think it's a negative to talk about health care for the comparisons to Romney Care in Massachusetts.
Well, I think that's exactly what they're thinking is. I'm just not sure they're right. You know, there were lots of things that Romney could have said. He could have said, it's different. The states have what we call police power. It was okay for us to call it a penalty in Massachusetts. It's not a penalty because the federal government doesn't have that power. I mean, there are all sorts of arguments that they could have made. Instead, they just decided to surrender it entirely at precisely the moment where the right was building up its enthusiasm. And my sense is that was a bit of a blunder. But the good news is that most of the rank and file and Tea Party types and base of the Republican Party, they haven't been taking their lead from Mitt Romney all along. They don't consider him their real natural leader anyway. They're much more in this as a social movement. And the good thing about the Supreme Court ruling is that basically everybody is all in now. Anybody who cares about Obamacare, anybody who's motivated by Obamacare, is going to have that be a big part of their decision in 2012. And whether Romney or Obama don't want to talk about it or not, the Tea Parties, the Freedom Works guys, the Americans for Prosperity guys, all the grassroots organizations, they know what happened. They know that the only way now to get rid of Obamacare is to vote for Romney, even if Romney's talking points don't line up with theirs.
We're talking with Jonah Goldberg. He is the national best-selling author. His latest book, The Tyranny of Clichés. He's a founding editor at National Review Online. And as luck would have it, he's in Traverse City the same time we are on Friday. He'll be appearing as the keynote speaker at An Evening with the Mackinac Center, one of those great events the Mackinac Center puts on from time to time. It's being held at the Grand Traverse Resort. The reception starts at 6, program at 7 o'clock on Friday night, with Jonah speaking and taking questions there. What kind of message are you taking now? Have you updated Tyranny of Clichés with what's happened here in the last few months since you released the book and we spoke last?
Well, I mean, I talk about it. I mean, I talk about the current political race a lot just because President Obama has been so useful and to provide confirmation of my thesis over and over again. He is a master of trying to frame issues in ways that don't quite line up with the facts, but sound plausible. And that's part of the argument of my book, is that the way the left writes, the way the left talks, is they don't want to reveal their actual ideology. They don't want to admit they have an ideology. And so they make their arguments largely through clichés, through ways of talking about the world that sound like it's something we all agree on, but if you bear a little closer inspection, it turns out we don't. Mm-hmm. President Obama, so much of his language, so much of his philosophy boils down to these arguments about, you know, community and we're all in it together and social solidarity and things are just better when we spread the wealth around. He says, if one American has a problem, we all have a problem. You know, and if that's true, I want him to come to my house and fix my toilet. come to my house and turn on my refrigerator, for Pete's sake. You know, my problems, to a certain extent, are my problems. And but you hear this sort of stuff. You hear it from Republicans, too. I mean, things like, you know, we all have to be dedicated to a cause larger than ourselves. It sounds nice, but invariably when politicians say that, what they really mean is that we need to dedicate ourselves to some political cause, some government agency, some paid volunteer program. And, you know, my understanding is that paid volunteers is either an oxymoron or just another term for employees. And the reality is that most of us are dedicated to causes larger than ourselves, our families, our businesses, our communities, our churches, our synagogues, our friends. You know, you can go through a long list. It's just that normal Americans don't define the causes larger than themselves in terms of government. The only person I know of who's truly not dedicated to a cause larger than themselves is Hannibal Lecter.
You know, I got in an interesting email exchange with one of our liberal listeners the other day. He, on the Obamacare ruling, said, you know, it's settled law now. We're a nation of laws. Stop arguing over this and let's just live by the law. And I said, oh, do you mean like enforcing immigration laws in the country and defending the Defense of Marriage Act? And he had no retort for that except to say these are silly rejoinders that don't bear any connection. I said, no, they bear an exact connection. You don't get to choose which laws you want to enforce and when the law is applicable.
No, I think your response is exactly right, but you can go further than that. I mean, the idea that once a law is on the books, everyone has to move on is sort of nonsense. I mean, you have to obey it while it's the law. I'm not for breaking the law, although there's an argument for civil disobedience. I mean, if the civil rights protesters, you know, obeyed the law, we wouldn't have had the civil rights movement. But, you know, in a democracy, every law is open for reexamination. You know, I mean, should we now, you know, and that goes to the Supreme Court, too. I mean, you know, should we now remember the people who fought to overturn the Fugitive Slave Act as bad guys?
Exactly.
You see these people on the Sunday shows, they talk about this all the time, and they say, you know, okay, now we just have to, you know, conservatives just have to move on. They just have to make peace with this. You know, they have to understand that the American people are saying enough already. And this, you know, and they've been saying this about Roe v. Wade for 40 years. You know, they just need to get over the fact that, you know, just get over it. But these are the most controversial laws in memory. They're hardly settled. There are mass movements built around them. There are governors of states in terms of Obamacare who are refusing to implement its provisions. The idea that this is, you know, a national consensus is sort of ludicrous. And in a democracy, democracy is about disagreement. It's not about agreement. You get to fight these things out.
So just how will this fall's elections affect the future of our country? Is it really going to define us for some time to come? We'll cover that next with Jonah Goldberg. Right now here on the Frank Beckman Show at News Talk 760, it's 925. A couple of minutes left here with Jonah Goldberg, the best-selling author. Nice to have him with us here this morning on the Frank Beckman Show. The upcoming elections. We've got the Obamacare decision that a lot of people think will have an impact at the polls. But the bigger question is this. You hear this mantra that these elections this year, in November, on November the 6th, are going to define our country for decades to come. Do you subscribe to that theory?
I think so. You know, I get really tired of people who say this is the most important election in our, you know, ever.
That's but, why I framed the question differently.
Yeah, no, and I appreciate that. I appreciate that because, you know, but this really is an incredibly important election. And just on the referendum on Obamacare alone issue, it's a big, big deal. Because if this thing truly gets implemented and gets sort of soldered and welded into our economic system and our healthcare system, it makes it very, very difficult to ever get out. And I think this election is the last chance to do that. And if it does get it fully implemented, then the fundamental relationship between the citizen and the state is pretty much forever altered. I mean, that's sort of the result of this Obamacare ruling itself, is that now inactivity is something that can be taxed and punished. And according to Justice Roberts' opinion, and that's a profound change. And
well, so of course, really, next time we call and you say you can't come on the show, we're going to charge you.
Exactly.
That's, you know, what it is. I went golfing the other day. Went to the pro shop. Didn't buy golf balls. They charged me $12. You know? It's unbelievable. Listen, Jonah, we appreciate the time this morning. Have a great stay in Traverse City. You'll love Grand Traverse Resort. The Mackinac Center people will love having you there and enjoy hearing from you. Thanks for being with us this morning.
Thank you, sir. Much appreciated.
Take care. Now, Jonah Goldberg, the New York Times bestselling author and founding editor at National Review Online, who's going to be at the evening with the Mackinac Center at the Grand Traverse Resort, 6 o'clock Friday night in Traverse City. If you're up there for the Cherry Festival, make plans to stop by.